The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast, episode 1114. It is Tuesday, the 10th of July, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Joe Badashil, corporate executive with Salt Lake Potash, that's SO4 ticker, and Joe discusses their projects, strategy, and upcoming milestones. Plus, I have Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talking about Legendary Investments, LEG, Cadence, KDNC, Findel, FDL, and Europa Metals, EUZ, and a big riser today. Plus, of course, I have top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Joe Badashil, corporate executive at Salt Lake Potash. That's SO4 ticker. Joe, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin, and thanks to your listeners for giving up their time to listen to the Salt Lake Potash story.
No worries. I've had a guy on the podcast a couple of times, Alan Green, who's a regular, come on the podcast and mention you guys. So it's nice to get the story from the horse's mouth, so to speak, Joe. So first and foremost, for people not aware of the story, who haven't heard Alan talk about it, can you summarise what Salt Lake Potash is about in a minute?
Yeah, very simply, Justin. Look, Salt Lake Potash is looking to enter the sulfate of potash market, or SOP market, by developing the Goldfield Salt Lake project in Western Australia, which we believe is potentially the most sustainable and rewarding fertiliser project in the world. After conducting almost 3 years of test work, which has validated all of the technical aspects of producing SOP from our Lake Wells project, we now expect to build a 50,000-tonne demonstration plant that will provide the template for a world-class SOP province across our portfolio of lakes.
Marvellous. And I'm on your presentation at your site there. I can see you've got 9 lakes, is that right?
That's correct. That's correct, Justin. 9 lakes in Western Australia. For those that do get to look at the map, it doesn't really do it justice. The map that we have there is actually about the same size as the UK.
Wow. So out of all those, are you saying Lakeway is the one at the moment that's most advanced that you're concentrating on?
Look, it is now. We have had a switch from Lake Wales just due to logistics, and a new opportunity arose at Lake Way. Lake Way is next to the highway. It's next to the gas pipeline. There's a company we've done a joint venture with there called Blackham Resources. Sorry, it's an MOU with Blackham Resources to cooperate on a development of an SOP operation on their Lake Way project. They have a mining license, so we can jump the mining license and effectively commence work earlier than we could on Lake Well. So yes, we have now shifted our attention to Lake Way.
Yeah, okay, because I've seen the last bit of significant news says initial results confirm Lake Way potential. Can you take us into the detail of this, please, and tell us about this potential?
Yeah, absolutely, Justin. Look, I mean, in terms of just taking a step backwards, I mean, in terms of building an SOP plant, you know, we want to be building significant volume. And we're talking sort of, you know, upwards of 400,000 tonnes per annum. However, we believe that the correct approach to this is to start with a smaller demonstration plant. It just helps to provide a template for the rest of the tenements. It's almost like a definitive feasibility study for all of our other lakes. But it also, you know, enables us to get some product into the market and get that customer acceptance, which we think is very important. So Lake Way, I mean, why is it important? Well, look, I mean, to start with, Blackham Resources have an old open pit on there on the lake surface that was mined about 12 years ago called the Williamson Open Pit. That's got about 1.2 gigalitres of a very, very high-grade brine in that pit. They want to go back into that pit next year and extend the gold mine. And we saw that as an opportunity to get access to that brine and also get onto their mining license where we can start construction without having to get the approvals on our own exploration license. So what we're looking at doing is basically developing a series of holding ponds or the initial evaporation ponds on Lake Way on their mining license, then dewater the pit for them, and basically that will be the forerunner of our demonstration plant, which we would then expect to be constructed and up and running by within the second half of next year.
Excellent stuff. This MOU, it does mention Mitsubishi. So what's the connection here?
We've had a very, very busy first 6 months of this year, Justin, and so we've got two MOUs out there. The first one was on Lakeway with Blackham Resources.
I see.
And subsequent to that, we signed an initial MOU for offtake with Mitsubishi Corporation. Mm-hmm. Now, our strategy for sales and distribution has always been to partner with global blue chip entities. And we believe that, you know, bringing Mitsubishi Corporation, you know, one of the world's largest trading and investment enterprises, into this business with us, is very much in line with our strategy, and also, you know, a significant point of validation for our project.
Okay, all right. So looking forward, say next 6-12 months, what milestones are you hoping to achieve there, then, Joe?
Yeah, sure, Justin. Look, I mean, we've got some, we think it'll be relatively short-term news flow in terms of the MOU with Blackham Resources. Mm-hmm. When we announced that, we said we would look to take that to the next level, or potentially take it to the next level should the results be sufficient by mid-year. Now, we're obviously at mid-year. So, look, I mean, we would expect that to be done relatively shortly. And we would look to, given the results we've had, as you mentioned from our last release, you know, the results we've had from Lakeway, I mean, at the moment, it would be fair to say that, you know, we would be keen to advance the MOU with Blackham onto to the next stage. As part of that, you know, we can't really commit to any project there until we've done the engineering study or a scoping study on the demonstration plant for Lakeway. Mm-hmm. So that's currently in train as well, and we would expect to have results of that very shortly as well. And on the sales and offtake side, the MOU with Mitsubishi Corporation is for 50% of the SOP production from the demonstration plant. We're in advanced negotiations with other parties for the remaining offtake. So we would hope to have that put to bed by the end of the year as well. So, you know, over the course of the next three to six months. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to be giving ourselves a very sort of clear timetable, and giving our investors a clear timetable of how we can see increased shareholder value. Importantly, you know, if we go ahead with the MOU or advance the MOU with Blackham Resources, we will look to commence construction of the holding ponds and the first evaporation ponds almost immediately, because we need to get those pits dewatered. That then puts us on a very definitive timeline for when first production could be. So it's going to be a very exciting, certainly a very exciting 6-12 months in terms of the development. But in terms of the news flow, the next 3-6 months is going to be very, very interesting and I think very value accretive.
Yeah, and I mentioned in your presentation there, you talk about you are the lowest quartile CapEx and OpEx, and it's worth pointing that out, isn't it? Because always when people are investing in anywhere, I think it's always prudent to look at companies that are lowest cost producers, because even in downturns, you know, you can operate profitably. But so what is the market like at the moment?
Well, look, interestingly, one of the significant points of appeal for the SOP industry is that unlike some of the other fertilizer products that are coming to market, the SOP market is a premium recognized fertilizer. There's been a very consistent price base over the last decade at around $500 a ton. One of the key reasons for this, Justin, is that, you know, just over 50% of the world's production of SOP comes from what they call the Mannheim process. And the Mannheim process is basically a conversion process where you take a ton of MOP, which is the bulk of the potash mined by the Canadians and the Russians, and you put it into a furnace and get the furnace up to 500-600 degrees with gas. You put in sulfuric acid, and at the back end, you get a ton of SOP and some hydrochloric acid. Now, because that is a conversion process, the SOP price is supported by that conversion cost. So you've got the price of the MOP, mm-hmm. you've got the price of gas, and you've got the price of the sulfuric acid.
Yes.
Now, our studies would show at the moment that the structure of the industry is such that, you know, the marginal cost of production is around $450 a ton, is around about $450 US a ton. Now, our studies to date show that we can produce this at a, you know, at a large scale, a fully operative 200,000 to 400,000 ton plant for less than $200 a ton. So in terms of that positioning on the cost curve, bottom of the cost curve, massively important, and certainly from a shareholder perspective, you know, we would not want to be anywhere else.
Understand. So if your costs are there, I have no idea what the price per ton is. How much would you be offtake agreement would be selling this for?
Well, look, I mean, that's yet to be determined. Obviously, you know, we will very much have to take the prices in the market. Mm. You know, we have a sales agreement, an offtake agreement to use the Mitsubishi distribution networks throughout Asia. But one of the points of comfort we get from the current pricing and the current market dynamics is that the SOP price has been largely unchanged for the last decade. So we don't believe, given how we view the supply and demand fundamentals of the SOP market, we think demand is we expect growth to be there. Generally from a low chloride fertilizer demand base, and also as SOP is used very much in high value products in fruits, nuts, tobaccos, turfs, oils. And demand for those high value products are going to lift as we see an emerging middle class come through from the emerging market. So we're very comfortable that, you know, there are long term mega trends that are supporting the SOP demand structure. And on the supply structure, you know, you've got this Mannheim process, which is incredibly non-environmentally friendly because of the acid and the temperature that has to be used. And we think we're going to see additional volumes of this Mannheim process SOP production fall out of the market through environmental restrictions. So where are you going to get new SOP demand from? Well, you know, you've got the salt lakes in Western Australia, or you've got the basins in Eritrea and Ethiopia, and outside of those, you're struggling to see where new demand is going to come from, or where new growth supply is going to come from. So we feel very comfortable about the current sort of pricing around $500 a ton. We don't see there's going to be much change from that. And if anything, it could be upwards, not down.
Yeah, I see. Okay, well, listen, Joe, if someone's listening to this and likes the sound of your story but are not yet following you, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page and add you to their watch list, please.
Certainly, Justin. Look, I mean, firstly, I mean, we believe shareholders, when it's an investment in Salt Lake Potash, we believe will give shareholders exposure to a new globally significant province of SOP, which is a premium recognized sustainable fertilizer with excellent market structure and pricing. Secondly, the project is technically proven with outstanding economics and profitability, with a fast track to production and low startup capex. And finally, the entire process is clean, green, and sustainable, which means that the Salt Lake Potash company should appeal to a much broader investor base.
Marvellous stuff, Joe. Good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll be chatting again in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Well, I look forward to that. Thank you very much, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. You're right, Al.
Oh, Jess, it's a wonderful time, isn't it? History in the making, and England in the World Cup semi-finals on Wednesday night. Can't wait. It's been quite a fantastic week.
Yeah, I think the weather's must have been breaking records, because I've never.
Yeah.
I can't remember, as long as I've been alive, it being this hot, this dry, such a long spell. I mean, maybe it happened when I was a kid. Those 76 is my order.
Summer of 76. That's
yeah.
it. Yeah.
But I can't remember it being like this. It's not. I mean, and even to the point where I remember going on holiday somewhere and having the misfortune of not having air conditioning, I mean, years ago somewhere, and finding it very hard to sleep in the evenings. And it's been like that here, you know? It's cooling down now, but that is unbelievable weather we're having, isn't it?
Well, it is. We stayed with family in Beckenham over the weekend and went up to watch the England-Sweden game. And Beckenham, it was just stifling. As you say, we couldn't sleep at night, windows open, trying to get some air. We had the fans going all night, and it was just too hot. It was incredible.
Do you mean the fans of England or the fans of...
Well, both. Yes,
yes, we could hear those as well.
Yeah. We were doing cartwheels, and the electric fans were doing the same as well. So it was, there were full rotations throughout the night. But it was a fantastic game, and England's young Lions look set to. Let's just be quietly and cautiously confident.
It's two games, isn't it? Or one game to the final, you know? Take each game as it comes, you never know. Okay, what are we looking at stocks wise, Al?
Okay, well, before we look at stocks, I want to talk about legendary investments, Epicode LEG. Want to talk about.
That's a stock, isn't it?
That's a stock indeed. Yes, it is. And I also want to talk about the educational software supplier Findel, FDL. Mm-hmm. But first of all, I'm going to talk about lithium. I mentioned Cadence Minerals on the podcast last week. KDNC is the Epicode. And of course, Cadence are a mining investment company that are invested into about 10 lithium projects around the world. Before I go into lithium, I just wanted to update on a couple of pieces of news since we last spoke in regard to Cadence, and that was, of course, Bacanora Lithium, in which Cadence has a significant stake, announced it raised $150 million to further develop and bring the Sonora Lithium project online and into production, which of course further de-risks that project and adds further value to it. And late last week, Auroch Minerals, in which Cadence has a 6.5% equity stake, is a company that owns the Bonaventure Base Metals project in Australia. Auroch said they'd identified a new target, and the CEO, Aidan Platel, said the potential for high-grade metal intersections in that new target is fantastic, quote-unquote. The grades we were talking about, sort of grading a little earlier. The high grade Zill drill intercepts for zinc in that region are 6.5% up to 6.5% zinc from the drill samples taken, which is pretty good. Kira Mazzara, the CEO, was enthused by the whole process. But going to step back from that now and just take a look at lithium. There's been some interesting data and surveys published this year. Morgan Stanley earlier in 2018 said that they predicted a fundamental oversupply of lithium to the battery market, which caused effectively led to a slump in the price of lithium carbonate and also a consequential slump in stocks as well. We move forward to July, and Goldman Sachs a couple of weeks ago published completely countered that view and said that the sell-off in lithium equities was overdone. And concerns about a wave of oversupply were completely unfounded. And Kira Mazzara at Cadence has been at pains to point out on numerous occasions in his presentations that actually developing a lithium mine at the right grade is an incredibly hard thing to do. And Goldman Sachs have undertaken research and actually support that view. It's hard to develop new lithium mines given the location and also bringing the right grades of lithium battery or lithium to market to supply the electric vehicle market, which of course is a burgeoning industry as we know. There are well known facts in regard to countries worldwide making moves to cut emissions. The biggest of all, of course, is China, which is aiming to cut emissions by 65% in the next 5 to 10 years. Given, of course, that there is a massive pollution problem there, and last year over 1 million people in China died directly as a result of air pollution, which is a pretty shocking statistic when you think about it. So lithium, the issue with lithium is that of supply. Now, electric vehicle sales are growing at a rate of knots. There was an article published in April by the Guardian that noted UK electric car sales have risen by 11% this year. If you take Norway, electric vehicle sales were up 48% compared to the previous year. But in China, China's commitment to meet its emissions target, electric vehicle sales there had risen by a massive 154%, which is quite considerable, set against the context of lithium supply. Which that data alone may well have prompted Goldman Sachs to take the view that there could perhaps be a supply issue after all. Up to this month, nextgreencar.com, the UK's electric vehicle market has risen again, up more than 3% in the UK over the previous year. But the key issue is that with the growth in electric vehicle sales and the difficulties and challenges in locating and finding good lithium mines, there is going to be an inflection point that's been predicted by Cadence Minerals in the year 2022, where the demand for electric vehicles will outstrip supply. And of course, at that point, the price of lithium carbonate is going to go through the roof. Already, electric vehicle sales are outstripping predictions from even a year ago. And if this continues, we could even see that inflection point come forward by a year to say 2021. Either way, we're a couple of years away from the point where there is going to be a struggle to locate and supply lithium to meet the demand for the electric vehicle industry. And of course, those companies that have the mines, those companies that are invested into the mining projects such as Cadence, are going to be very much in pole position. So worth a look. There's plenty of evidence available on the internet, but look at the Goldman Sachs report, the Cadence Minerals website, which will have plenty of information in that regard, and you can draw your own conclusions.
Yeah, well, do you know, I was having a discussion with, I've invested in the Kodal Minerals lithium, and someone said, I think you missed the lithium thing. I said, what are you talking about? He said, well, it's happened. I said, they said, you missed the lithium boom. I said, what are you talking about? It's like, I said, not even, I think 1% of the world's cars are EV yet, and they reckon it'll be 30% by 2030. So, I think it may be 3%, actually. But I mean, we've got 10 times as much in the next 10 years. And I said, well, I know, but there's plenty. I said, no, it's not that. The supply is there, but it's getting out of the ground and getting viable, sort of economic minds into focus. And I said, look at Goldman Sachs. And the person did say, well, Goldman Sachs talked their own book, very contrarian. I said, yeah, but the thing is, if the experts are still discussing it and don't really know, then I don't really know. So I'm going to hedge my bets and invest in a lithium company, because if it does go bananas, I've got exposure to it. And I can't see, being oversupplied, really, if the entire world is going towards lithium-ion batteries. Well, I mean, there may be an alternative source by then, of course, but I just think there will be, renewed interest in the lithium market. And I think EVs adoption is taking off faster than we think. So I think it's one of those things, you've got to have exposure to it. I think we don't really know at the moment, and making a second guess to me is cut off some excellent upside, investment-wise. So I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to try and pre-guess the lithium market. I'm just going to accept that it's going to be very popular,
Well, another factor is also the actual manufacturing process. So governments are under pressure to meet these emission targets. So the manufacturers have got to look at ways of meeting this. The internal combustion engine has got many hundreds, if not thousands, of moving parts. The average electric vehicle engine has about 18 to 20 moving parts, which means it's very cheap to manufacture in quantity. So it'll get to the stage where the price of electric vehicles may well fall below that of the internal combustion engine-powered vehicles, and that will, of course, itself fuel a rise in sales. If the electric vehicles are cheaper, they're cleaner, you know, why wouldn't you? It's an absolute no-brainer. And it's the quickest way is the quickest way for governments to meet their emission targets. If they're looking to cut emissions from vehicles that are being manufactured, electric vehicles are by far the quickest way to meet those targets.
Marvellous. What else are you looking at, Al? Anything else there?
Yes, indeed. I mentioned legendary investments just now. Epicode Leg, L-E-G. Legendary is an investment company, as the name would suggest, and it's invested into a number of projects. Virtual Stock Holdings is a company that has a transactional system which has undertaken work and projects with Bear Grylls, Tesco, and the NHS, and it's got numerous other joint ventures. The company also has an investment into IBS Corporation, which is not irritable bowel syndrome, as some people might think, but it's actually a banking network based in New Zealand, online banking in that part of the world is some way behind the Western world and even Australia for that matter. And IBS invested into Legendary invested into IBS at a nominal valuation. And the IBS was granted the authority to operate its banking services in April this year by the New Zealand regulatory authorities, which of course has added a massive amount of valuation to that investment. Legendary also owns nearly 10% of Crowd for Angels, the crowdfunding platform, and data from Alexa shows that Crowd for Angels visitors to that website have grown to the point where Crowd for Angels is now the third most visited UK crowdfunding platform, presumably behind Cedars and CrowdCube, which is no mean achievement. Company's also got a stake in Circle Oil Tunisia, which was acquired by Dunraven Resources Limited. Legendary has a 2% stake in that. The investments that the company has are now valued at 6.2 million, which is up 46.5% on the previous year. Net assets have risen to 6 million, up 27%. And significantly for the company, for the actual company's operations, it's now delivered a full year net profit of $665,000 against a loss of $281,000 last year. But I think that one of the key things to remember is that Legendary's valuation doesn't take into account any forward sales or any discussions that might be underway with parties in regard to potential contracts in the future that could acquire value. It's based purely on what's happened, the deals that have been done, the contracts that have been signed, and the money that's in the bank. So there's no upside built into the price at all. But I think given the progress that Legendary has made this year and their spread of investing, the team led by Zafar Karim, who's a former Rothschild banker, and Thomas Reuner, who's ex-Gartner and KPMG, I think warrants some consideration. And if they carry on this way, I think particularly the IBS investment in New Zealand could be a very fruitful investment.
Uh-huh. Leg, L-E-G, is the ticker there. Anything else, Al?
Yeah, want to talk about Findel. FDL is the epicode. Based in Accrington up in the Midlands, near to Manchester, and it's the company's got two arms to its business. Yeah,
you know,
indeed.
One arm is no good. Well, yeah, say that.
One arm is no good.
Lots of people use one, get by on one arm, but it's hard to drive a motorbike with two arms. So
it certainly is.
Two arms is good.
Thankfully, I've got two and plan to stay that way for some time. But there we go. So Findel have that they have Express Gifts, which is one of the largest direct mail order businesses in the UK, and they are the second largest listed independent supplier for resources and equipment to schools up and down the UK. The company has historically had some difficulties with the educational business, but last month the company published full year results, which showed that revenues had risen by 5% to 479 million. Adjusted operating profits were up 15%. The performance was driven by Express Gifts, but the educational business was showing a turnaround, and the company is in the process of cutting costs and streamlining that particular arm of the business. This was also picked up by VectorVest, my colleague Dr. David Ball, who I've discussed numerous times in the past. VectorVest have identified Findel as a high potential turnaround opportunity. VectorVest is a stock analysis and portfolio management platform, and it has a number of metrics that flag up these opportunities when the stocks reach a certain inflection point. The relative timing metric, which is an indicator of a stock's price trend for Findel, is logging at 1.46, which on a scale of 0 to 2 is very good. And the relative value metric, long-term price potential, is again at 1.4, which is again excellent. VectorVest have a price target of just under £4, 3.98p per share. And of course, the stock currently trading at 2.88p. It's got a very good chart, a very bullish chart, which shows bullish price action after testing a series of previous highs. And given the turnaround in the business, I think you've got the strength there of Express Gifts, which is a constant performer. But with the turnaround in the educational supplies business, we could well see the share power onto that target over the next 6 to 8 months.
Marvellous stuff. FDL, you said?
FDL is the ABIC code, yep.
Cool, that's it. Anything else to go with?
Well, before we came in, we were chatting about European metals, weren't you? Or European metals, EUZ.
Yeah, I've got to say, I do hold stock in this. I'm quite bullish on this. In fact, it's one of my five picks to outperform in 2018. So just to let you know everyone, I've done lots of research. The thing is, what I liked is that...
Well, I'm also a shareholder there too, so I will declare an interest, but I think one of the things that has impressed me is the actual scale of the operation. It's and also the environment in which the operation is based, and the historic mining activity. It's almost like if there is such a thing, a plug and play mine. All the resource and the infrastructure is there, and it's almost like as if somebody has to just flick a switch and then apply the latest mining technology.
Yeah, it's an industrialized area with previous zinc mines around it in Spain, and that's never underestimated when you come to jurisdictions. So first world country, in an area, industrialized area that's been mined before. But what was happened this week? In fact, 2 weeks, Lawrence, the CEO, did a video, a Shares Magazine video. And I didn't know this about the thing. When they first went to look at this asset, they didn't have a lot of information on it, they didn't think. And then they said, in Spain, it's law to hold some of the core drilling bits, the core they've sucked out from previous drills. They've got to hold them. So the company takes half, and Spain, land registry, takes half. And so they found out where the core shed was. And, and Lawrence and we travelled down there expecting sort of little tin rickety shed with a very disorganised maybe manager or flustered person in charge, or someone who doesn't really care in charge.
Paperwork. Some guy with his feet up on his desk wearing a giant sombrero, that sort of thing. Yeah.
And they went there, and it was a very high-tech complex, very new, everything, computerised, and it literally piles and stacks of all shelves, all brand new shelves, everything logged precisely. They went there and 44,000 meters of drilling had taken place at Toral, this asset, and it's pretty much all been logged. And they said, wow. And that's when they discovered in the Jock Resorts they had silver as well as zinc and lead. And yeah. Silver, of course, is worth a lot. So it really, and I remember Miles coming on the podcast saying this, it's changed from a burger to a cheeseburger, you know, this asset. But he said, that we know so much about this now. It's not really, even though they're going to be doing some extension drilling, see how long big the resource is, which should make the resource bigger. It's not the key aim just to find out how far it goes. But he said, it's not really exploration anymore because he said, this is close because we know so much about it because there's so much good results there from the previous drills. And
yeah.
And they've had a meeting there, first meeting of all the team. And there's the Addison Mining Resources who are doing the studies there, and the scoping study, which is out at the Q4, which is a big thing, scoping study. And it'll show you how much, you know, how viable it is economically. But they've also got the previous guy in charge, a tech mining guy, in charge of the mine next door, who run that profitably. He's the head of that mine. And he right. basically says, this is how you do it. So basically, and Lawrence took a lot of pictures and posted them on Vox, worth looking at. But they've got, looks like a very good team there. And Lawrence said a scoping study will be with them Q4 easily. And I think, considering this is a sub 4 million market cap, the figures around this will be quite surprising, I think, because it's big. It's 16 million tons of zinc and lead and silver. And I think it'll be. I've done a blog on the comparison peer, which is very similar metal in ground value. And their net present value for their sort of mine is in Poland. They didn't have silver. And also Europe's resource is a bit bigger, but their net present value was 170 million. And I'm thinking that you're talking about a sub 4 million market cap, you know? So,
versus 3.5 million,
It'd be interesting to see what happens here. I mean, there we are. But doing research, like I said, it is still sort of risky, but I just think for that level, they've got cash, you know, to develop it.
That's it. They've got cash. It's underscored by strong base metal prices. You know, zinc prices are very buoyant. And as I said at the start, it's almost like a plug and play mine, really, isn't it? Everything is there, and that's borne out by the manager of the mine next door saying, you know, this is how you do it. You know, you throw that switch over there, plug that in there, and away you go. That's a very simplistic overview, but actually, it's not far off that.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, very interesting. I think we're coming to the crunch time now. At last, the previous management, the reason why so undervalued is the previous management, you know, overpromised, underdelivered, and now we've got a new board in there who are focusing on one project and actually taking it through and developing it and de-risking it and therefore proving up the value. So a very interesting play. Anyway, I'll... thanks for that, fella, and I'll speak to you next week.
Speak next week.
And who knows? We could be in the. Is it Sunday? We could be. You know, England could be world champions. You never know.
One step at a time. Just let's, you know, Wednesday night first. Let's get past Croatia. You know, who are no pushover. Okay, I mean, Luka Modric, ex-Spurs. I know he's a great little magician in midfield. But if we can shut him down, I think we can shut Croatia down.
Marvellous. Al, thanks, fella. Speak soon.
Thanks, Jess. Speak soon.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Riabold Resources, RBD. At four, BP, BP Dot. At three, Expediator, XPD. At two, Bahamas Petroleum, BPC. And number one most followed company on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours is Alpha Growth, ALGW. Okay, time for the top five most followed companies. Sorry, most liked RNSs. I'm behind you here. While I'm talking, I'm trying to find the tab. I've got too many tabs open. You know, we have too many tabs and you can't see where the heck you're looking. Most popular RNSs are as follows at five. Central Asia Metals, that's CAML, CAML. At four, Main Energy, MYN, update on heavy oil sands project. By the way, Central Asian Metals was H1 2018 operations update. At three, Live Company Group, launch of Brick Live Christmas in Monaco. Wow, already that's going to be a long Christmas there. It's for Christmas, not launching for Christmas. At two, Petromatad, spud of Snow Leopard 1 well. Our number one, most liked RNS, came from Metal Tiger, Strategy Company operations update. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos appreciatus.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.